Stay a while. Stay forever.
Hello, I'm Rob.
And I am Rob as well.
And welcome to Marmalade. And this is a little bit of a special episode because we are looking back over the games that stood out for us over the last year for one reason or another. So this isn't necessarily a best of last year. This is just the games that stood out for us.
Wow, he's burying the lead. Here's something you usually say on the first episode of the new year. Right, call me old-fashioned. But then again, what the time we're in, I don't think it can be this. But I'm going to go on ahead and say it anyway. Happy New Year, everybody.
Are we in the New Year? I have lost track of what day it is. Yeah.
Yes, we are. Whether that is a fair assessment of what the next 12 months will be, we shall see. But I'm still going to wish people it.
Yes, Happy New Year. I am sorry that I didn't do that first.
So now, whiz back a bit and
yeah,
get back
what
on
I was
the
saying
train.
At the beginning. Anyway, start as you mean to go along. So, looking back over the previous year and games that stood out for us of the previous year.
Well, I think a nice way to say this, I mean, people play all the new games. A lot of people play like brand new games the second they come out, and they're very much, as content creators like to say, they're part of the conversation.
Yeah.
Isn't that nice? However, there's a just as large a group of gamers who don't really like that. They wait for games. They take their time. They're so let out to other parts of games culture. So this episode is kind of a testament to that. It's a testament to backlogs. It's a testament to trying things out because they're now cheap.
Yeah.
So instead of saying these are 12 games that 2020 was whiz, bang, pop, amazing, it's more like here are some games that we played for the first time in 2020 that really connected with us in some way, which is a different thing.
Yeah, the first one for me, I'm going to get this out of the way because a lot of people have been talking about the new Spider-Man game, Miles Morales. Well, I didn't actually get around to playing the original Spider-Man game until earlier on this year. And the thing for me is I've played a lot of Spider-Man games. In fact, I've probably played 90% of the Spider-Man games that have been released on computers and consoles. The weird thing is, in terms of mechanics, there are a couple of games that stand out. Spider-Man 2, the original Spider-Man games, and, weirdly, Ultimate Spider-Man. That weird cartoony one with Venom. That one stands out as well because they really had good swinging mechanics. And then you have this new Spider-Man game that came out and everyone's talking about, oh, it's such a joy, and everyone's talking about it. And I'm looking at the videos of it and thinking, okay, I'll get around to that sometime, at some point. And it kept getting put off. Played it this year, and I thought, wow, this is really fun.
Well, it took me an ages to play it because I'm a eternal tight fist, and I won't pay a certain amount of money for a game, and I was waiting for Spider-Man to drop, and it took ages for it to drop.
Yeah, because that many people enjoyed the game.
But then I got it, yeah.
The thing that I liked about the Spider-Man game was that was the way the story went, and I don't think it's a spoiler to talk about it now. Everybody knows about the story.
Yeah, I wouldn't say everybody. There's always that one person, isn't there?
Okay, just in case, there is a spoiler ahead.
There's always that one Hans Moleman, isn't there?
Yeah, there is. So just in case, there is a spoiler ahead. So if you want to just put your fingers in your ears and go la 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 right now, then, you know, we'll tell you when you can stop.
Don't do that because your older brother will come by and punch you in the arm for being an idiot. So there's other ways to be quiet and do that. Skip on the timeline a little bit. That's a more conventional method.
So anyway, you missed what I said. I said, put your fingers in your ears and go la 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 and we'll tell you when to stop.
Oh, right, yeah.
The whole ending of Spider-Man I thought was quite bold with the death and the funeral and everything. I thought it kind of mirrored what Rocksteady did with Batman Arkham City, to a degree, in that they
Which
made
one was
a
Arkham City again?
Arkham City was the second one.
Is that the one where, spoiler alert for game, which is about a decade old now,
yeah,
Joker dies?
Yes. And I thought, doing that with Spider-Man, you know, doing a similar thing with Spider-Man, not with Spider-Man's nemesis, but with someone who's very close to Spider-Man, actually having that was a very telling moment. And it was a lot more mature and a lot more advanced, because in the comics, they have killed off Aunt May in the comics, right? And there's a notorious Spider-Man comic called One More Day. Do not read it, okay? It's awful. Just ignore that. Ignore the fact that I've said anything about Spider-Man comics. Ignore that. Do not look for it. Don't talk about it.
I'm not sure now if he wants me to edit that bit out, what he just said. So
now, leave it in, but just everyone who's listened to this, ignore it, okay? Spider-Man One More Day does not exist.
Oh, I'm trapped in a sci-fi conundrum now. I both exist and don't. I'm Schrodinger's podcast editor.
But yeah, Spider-Man, I loved it. I thought it was great. But I will say, it does wear down a little bit quick as well. The thing that keeps the game going is the swinging mechanic across the city.
Yeah, the missions, the side missions. I can't remember the name of the girl who keeps on giving you challenges and say... Screwball, is it? Screwball challenges.
Yeah.
And that's in the DLC for the original game as well, and it's just hateful. It's a hateful character.
Do you know what I really like?
And running after pigeons, because that is basically... God,
yeah. I hate the pigeon ones.
Terrible side content.
The thing that I liked about Spider-Man in particular were the internal monologues that Peter Parker was having when he was on the job, especially when he's liaising with the detective and he's thinking he's, like, detective whatever it
Spider
was.
Spider-Cop.
Yeah, Spider-Cop, that was it.
Yeah.
So that I thought was quite fun and very Peter Parker.
It's my one platinum.
But the only one?
Yeah.
Ever?
Yeah, I don't really do platinums.
Wow, I don't think I've ever done a platinum because I'm not really a trophy person.
Anyway, I'll throw out my first quicko. It's Judgment, which I've talked about probably too much, but essentially I can boil it down into the fact that it makes a series which is as long in the tooth as Yakuza feel fresher than it ever has by slightly remixing Kamurocho, by adding a whole new gallery of characters, their power mechanics, putting in things like drone control and drone races and private investigation, all this stuff. And the story is really well played out and it genuinely feels like a major thing. Whereas in Yakuza games, it's kind of like, oh, I'm a Yakuza and you're going to be a Yakuza and I don't want you to be a Yakuza because I'm a Yakuza, 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 and I want to punch you with my shirt off. And that's about as complex as the stories get, whereas this was kind of a bolt of energy that made that town and universe feel a bit more alive than it has in a while.
I was talking to my nephew, my brother's son and my sister yesterday, and I was talking to them about video games that they should play, and Yakuza was one of the games that they asked me about, like the new one, Yakuza Like a Dragon. I said, okay, you can play that one, or you can play the original Yakuza games, Yakuza 0 all the way through to Yakuza 6, and I've got to say Yakuza 0 and Yakuza Kiwami 1 and 2 are amazing games. You should try those first, totally try them.
And 6.
Yeah, and 6. Song of Life is great as well. And they said, so what is Yakuza about? And that's where I got stuck.
It's about Yakuza being Yakuza and punching people with their shirts off.
No, because the next question was what threw me totally. They said, what's it about? What can you do in the game?
And everything.
That was my answer. I went, you can do everything in the game. You can go singing at karaoke. You can play old video games. You can play darts. You can chat up girls. You can do...
You can chat up webcam models, Rob. Be specific.
Yeah. Webcam models. You can basically, you can catch thrown babies. You can play baseball.
And there's a thing, you learn about sort of shops that are in Japan as well. Like, I didn't realise there was this sort of red light district where you could go into a shop and take pictures of buxom women for a fee. And I thought, well, Japan, I'm learning something about you through Yakuza. So it's filling a public service. I'm not saying that sort of I want to go and do it, because I'll probably be classic Englishman where I try to, like, say, you're better than this and try to rescue them. Because I got a friend who worked at an old place trying to do the same with streetwalkers in Rome. So it's a thing. It's programmed into us. We can't help it, Rob.
The classic British gent. But yeah, trying to
and that's Yakuza. Yakuza is all at the heart of that, yeah.
Yeah, trying to explain Yakuza to a teenager is just try to explain Yakuza, the whole franchise, to a couple of teenagers.
They'll probably love it eventually.
Oh yeah, I said, look, if you like anything like anime and manga and stuff like that, then you're gonna love Yakuza.
Yeah. Okay. Right. So your first main one.
So, yeah, my first main one, because Spider-Man was more of a mention than anything else. And big one for me for this year was the remake of Sakura Wars. It really stood out for me because you know how much of a fan I am of certain titles. The Italia franchise, but also Sakura Wars.
They're a terrible anime JRPGs. I hear fans of those. So I just whenever one comes in for a press release, I think, Rob will do it because I don't care.
Not quite, because there's only a certain number of them that I actually do pay attention to. The Tales franchise is one that I do pay attention to. I mean, let's put it this way. I stopped paying attention to Final Fantasy a long time ago, right?
Yeah.
The majority of JRPGs that come out, I don't really pay attention to. But there are a certain few that I will... I mean, the Italian ones, I'm a terminal fan anyway, so, you know, that just gets put to one side. We don't really talk about that. But Sakura Wars was one that... I've loved the original Sakura Wars game for a couple of decades now. And I've always considered it a shame that it never got a remake. But then this year, they did a remake of it, and it was great. It was an amazing game. Okay, there were some bits that needed a bit of polish, and there were some bits where, you know, it just didn't work as well as maybe it did in the original game. But in terms of the overall game itself, it was everything I wanted from a Sakura Wars remake game, and then some. You know, you can't really want more than that. And the whole idea of it is, the whole idea of Sakura Wars... Okay, it's so Japanese, it hurts. It's so anime, it hurts. You have a group of girls who are part of a theatre troupe, but they're secretly mech pilots who defend the city from demon invasions. Well, this is the thing, Sakura Wars had a lot of interesting ideas when it first came out, and the year it came out, the year the original game came out, was the same year that Final Fantasy VII came out, and the only reason it didn't get number one game when it came out was because of Final Fantasy VII.
So it's 97, 98.
Yeah, but that original game wasn't released in the West for a long time. And so a lot of Westerners didn't actually know about this game called Sakura Wars, which was weird and strange. Let me put it this way, Sakura Wars is one of those franchises that I put in the same category as Yakuza. It's weird, it's strange, it's not your normal JRPG. It doesn't fit into the typical JRPG mold.
I don't care unless it's got a simulator of cabaret clubs. And if it doesn't have a cabaret club simulator in Sakura Wars, I'm sorry, but I just don't care.
There is a theatre troupe and you have steampunk mechs fighting demons.
That, to a lot of people, that sounds like it'd be more badass. But no, I just want to run a cabaret club. And I've got simple pleasures in life and that's one of them.
All right, simple pleasures being the case, what's your next one?
I'm not going to rise to that at all. I think this year was the year where I really clicked with Arkane. I like Dishonored 1.
Yeah.
Plenty. It was a solid 7 out of 10 for me. I don't mean that in a score. I mean that sort of as a ethos sort of thing. As in everything it does well. It just didn't have that spark of... motivation or whatever, or a spark of energy which just turned something from this is pretty good to wow, I love this is amazing.
Yeah, I mean, I felt that way about quite a lot of games this year. They were good but not great.
Just didn't have that spark.
Yeah.
Dishonored 2 was a bit closer to having that spark, but I'm not a big fan of stealth games because there's two ways you can play Dishonored. You can go through it stealthy and the whole world is sort of pristine. Or you can go through it and kill everybody and the whole world looks like a H.P. Lovecraft nightmare. Guess which one I do?
Yeah, I know which one you went for. See, the thing that bugs me about stealth games is that they always take the same approach with stealth games. I've noticed it's always total stealth or total all guns blazing. And there's never that grey area between where you can do like 30% stealth, 70% guns blazing, or 70% stealth, 30% guns blazing. There's never they never do those shades of grey.
That was the major problem with a lot of people had with the Deus Ex games.
Yeah,
but that's another issue. But Prey, I played. Prey was a game which a lot of people talked down to. It got pretty middling reviews, honestly. It didn't win any fans. It just kind of... It was one of those games which says, yeah, I could get Prey, but there's this AAA game which I want instead. So it was slept on by a lot of people.
Yeah, I've got to admit, I'm kind of a fan of what they did with Prey.
I love Prey because it's the style of RPG first-person game which I adore. It's BioShock 3.
Yeah.
Basically.
Do you know one of the things I love about Prey, right? I was watching a friend of mine play it, and he managed to avoid the alien by turning himself into a mug.
I never went down that quest line because in getting it, I can't remember the name of the powers, it turns all the security devices against you and it just couldn't be arsed doing that.
Yeah. But, any game in which you can avoid the enemy by turning yourself into a mug is a good game in my book.
Yeah, and it got slept on a great deal. It's BioShock. It's got this power system which is incredibly robust and innovative.
Oh, yeah.
And its story opens up... Okay, let me put it another way. It's like Dead Space meets BioShock, and that is basically me in Hog Heaven.
Yeah, actually, that is you. That's you wallowing in that game.
It has one of these things which... games either get wrong or they get right. Multiple endings.
Yeah.
And this one, it's got a pretty drastic twist at the end. And I can't really talk about it as a twist ending because it's a big bomb drop, isn't it? I don't know if you've played it at completion, but yeah, I love that a lot. And apparently the Moon Crasher, I think it's called Moon Crasher, the DLC, is possibly one of the better DLCs of this generation, I've heard. But it's... That was the thing which affirmed in my mind that Arkane are kind of one of the best developers working today. One of the more unsung developers.
Yeah.
Because they have an imagination there. They can tell stories that are compact, that get to the point, and basically, they haven't done a Neil Druckmann. And you say, Neil Druckmann, if you've seen that episode of South Park where Carl's family moves to San Francisco and his dad starts farting in his wine glass and sniffing it and going, that's tasty. That's Neil Druckmann.
Which conveniently brings me on to my next one.
I don't like Neil Druckmann, so pick up that segue.
It does conveniently bring me on to my next one, because my next one is The Last of Us 2. And this stood out for me for both good and bad reasons. Okay, in terms of the game itself, in terms of how the game's put together, the actual mechanics of the game, everything like that, don't have a complaint, right?
Well, I've heard it was basically about 12 hours too long and really repetitive.
I'm talking about the actual mechanics of the game, not the actual game, not the content of the game, just the mechanics.
No, that's related, because the mechanics get drawn out because you're doing them over and over and over and over and over again for about 12 hours too long.
Exactly. But, in terms of those mechanics, they're well put together, the environments are really well crafted, the designs are great, you know, the animation's great, everything's great about the production of the game, except for the actual story and the character, right?
And for a studio which values story and characters as much as Naughty Dog.
Yeah. Do you know what annoyed me about a lot of the coverage of The Last of Us 2? And I feel like...
Cross the bear, sorry. But yeah,
I feel like it's okay to talk about The Last of Us 2 now that we're into 2021 because a lot of the angst has gone from it. I'll be honest, I don't care, right? I don't care because a lot of people who were giving quite fair criticism were being called transphobe or homophobe or things like that. And like, well, no, they're actually criticizing the game. They're not criticizing these characters are the usage of these characters in the game. They're criticizing the game itself, and their criticisms were quite fair for a lot of them. But gaming journalists being gaming journalists, and you know, social media being social media.
I'm not going to go into this too much because this is a very tender topic on the internet world. But I think 2020 was basically the year which people's trust in video game journalists.
Took a
evaporated.
Dive.
It evaporated. Yeah. I don't think there's much trust for that left anymore.
See, this is the thing. The Last of Us 2 was basically painting by numbers story about how revenge is bad. And I'm like, well, hang on.
Sorry. And violence is bad.
No, painting by numbers about how revenge is bad. Not violence is bad, but specifically revenge is bad. Right?
That too. Says violence is bad. Ooh, violence is bad. Look at this physics that make it really you know, cool to do.
No, because if violence was bad, they wouldn't do the physics that make it look really cool, right?
No, but so that's the whole thing. So, that was one of the points. That was one of the things that the game was called out for, being hypocritical.
Yeah, if you honestly believe violence is bad, you wouldn't make it... it's basically what? What was it? Sniper Elite, yeah?
Violence is bad and you're sick for enjoying it, but look at how much effort we put into this gameplay.
Sniper Elite does not go around saying violence is bad. Because if Sniper Elite starts going, violence is bad, why are you doing all those glorious slow-motion shots of bullets smashing skulls?
Yeah, it's like Mortal Kombat suddenly saying violence is bad.
Here's the thing. Last of Us 2 was effectively two games in one. Abby's story should have been a separate game, right?
It really should have. Put in 2 and 3 together, didn't they?
Yeah, they basically crammed so much into one game, and the two did not mesh. They didn't mesh at all. See, Ellie's story and Abby's story got really, really confusing because the two of them are effectively in one game. And you're seeing the story supposedly from both sides, but you're not. You're seeing part of The Last of Us and Last of Us 2, right? And one of the things that is very, very, very well documented, and a lot of people will say the same thing, a lot of parents will say the same thing, as soon as you have a child, your perspective on just about everything changes, right? Ellie, for a lot of the game, for a good portion of the game, is in a loving, stable relationship, and they have a baby, right? That would change her perspective. She wouldn't be... any emotions she had towards getting revenge for Joel would basically start becoming dimmer.
Okay, the let's put it another revenge, way. Right. The problem with a lot of blaxploitation movies, is it's hard to be black and the man is... You've got to stick it to the man.
Yeah.
The problem is a lot of those movies were written by upper middle class white men.
Yeah.
So it doesn't really know what it's like to be a struggle in black America.
Yeah. See, this is the thing. Abby's story, you know, about going to get revenge for Joel, that actually made more sense than Ellie's story about getting revenge for Joel. Sorry, Abby getting revenge on Joel, Ellie getting revenge for Joel, because Abby had lost basically everything because of Joel.
Yeah.
Whereas Ellie really, you know, for a portion, before she met Joel in The Last of Us, he was a total stranger.
He hated her when he first met her.
Exactly.
Admittedly, there becomes the father-daughter relationship through that, but...
There is a quasi-father-daughter relationship through that, but given that Ellie is now a full-grown adult and has her own relationship, has her own child, effectively, with her partner, you know, that changes the perception of things.
Yeah, let's just wrap it up there, but I will say this one thing on that. Wrap it up for that point, anyway.
Yeah.
In this game, I've basically lost faith in Naughty Dog. And Naughty Dog are basically the castle of which PlayStation 4 was built on.
Yeah.
Or the grounds. And it's going to take a lot for Naughty Dog to win over my interest again.
Yeah, I mean, for me, The Last of Us, when it got to the whole point of Ellie deciding I'm going to throw away everything that I've worked hard to build up just so I can get revenge for, you know, for them killing this person, I thought, I'm out. Because this is exactly the same as Lara Croft in the Tomb Raider remake, you know, killing one person, vomiting, and then becoming this master killer with a necklace of scrotums.
Yeah,
but it is basically the same sort of thing. It's that inconsistent logical leap that basically relies on you being so absorbed in all the shiny details of the graphics that you ignore what's going on in the story. Sorry, I can't do that.
The term they use for it is ludonarrative dissonance, but
yeah,
we'll move on past that. And yeah. I talk about shooty terms with BJ Blazkowicz.
See, if ever there was a franchise that had a lot of ludonarrative dissonance, but you just don't care.
Apparently I had some controversy about it. I never care about controversy after the fact because people get so insular about their views and the world having to cater to their views that they lose sight of a lot of things and a lot of alternative, maybe conflicting perspectives.
Yeah.
Because people have a thing on the internet of basically surrounding themselves in a circle which confirms all their biases. We're really getting into the internet now, aren't we? The internet's bad. So, basically, I played New Colossus. And I won't talk about it for long, but I love what Machine Games have done. The first one was a very, very good reimagining of possibly the first ever first-person shooter. It was either Wolfenstein or Doom. They're both pretty close to each other. I think it might have been Wolfenstein.
It was Wolfenstein was the first one.
Doom, the last boss Doom was Hitler. Came, yeah.
Yeah, Doom came after Wolfenstein.
Yeah. It was around the same time, though. So.
No, Doom definitely came after Wolfenstein.
Oh, no, but they're all sort of late 80s, early 90s. They're around that sort of time frame. I'm not being within 6 months. I mean, like, within 5 years, they're both pretty.
All right, okay, yeah.
But, yeah, I really like that first one, and that this second one builds upon it in every way. It's basically a R-rated Saturday morning cartoon, and it goes through some really wild plot beats, because as the game begins, you basically should be dead. You're crippled from the neck down, and you get a machine suit which allows you to control your body and have super strength. You go to Saturn and you face Hitler, and as part of an advert to do a film for a, what was the name of the character, the Violent Johnny or something, I can't remember the name. the Nazi PR machine has given BJ Blazkowicz, because he's basically painted as the boogeyman. So to do a film about the boogeyman, BJ Blazkowicz goes to Saturn to meet Hitler, who's the producer of the film. You see what I mean? It's a goofy Saturday morning cartoon. And it's quite grisly, quite emotional, because he addresses his childhood as well. It's just basically, it's hitting all of these weird notes in the script. And it gives you a bad guy, who's the bad guy from the first one, who's genuinely despisable. And I've said this before about Guillermo del Toro. He basically makes these bad guys who you absolutely despise and want to see bad stuff happen to them, but they're presented in such a way where you understand why they are.
Yeah.
And the bad guy in this, again, this, I'm talking about a game I played in April, so the name's beyond BJ Blazkowicz, I'm not 100% on. But they do a great job with all the supporting cast and the places you go, and it keeps the gameplay fresh by not just having a procession of run along this corridor, shoot that man levels. You have a part of the game where you basically control a giant fire-breathing cyber dog. You ride on its back and it's yours.
See, I don't need the fire-breathing cyber dog, because I was sold at the... look, he's basically a head on a cybernetic robot. It's very Futurama.
And it's set in a 1980s, a future 1980s. Kind of a future, but your military base is a sub, and you do sort of like side missions around it. It's just, when the news broke this past year that Microsoft bought Bethesda, before that I was absolutely 100% going to get a PlayStation 5. People focused on that acquisition because of Fallout, because of Skyrim, and all the other games that Bethesda Mainline does. But when I heard about it, I was really panicking, because I love Arkane, I love id Software, and I love Machine Games. So, yeah, that's conflicted me as to what I'm going to do now, because, yeah, as I've mentioned, the big sort of centerpiece of the PlayStation dynasty, which is Naughty Dog, have, I wouldn't say betrayed me, because I'm not as melodramatic as some people on the internet. It's just they've kind of jumped the shark, to use that popular adage.
Yeah, they've dropped the ball. I mean, it's one of those things where CD Projekt Red.
But my point is, New Colossus adore it. Adore it.
Yeah, CD Projekt Red are kind of in the same boat. We expected a lot. They built up a good reputation for a decade and then spoiled it within a week. But I'm not going into that, okay? I'm not going to talk about Cyberpunk.
It might
today.
Be good in a year.
Might be good in a year. I'm hoping it goes the way that Hello Games took No Man's Sky. Because No Man's Sky is a good game now.
It should be. It probably should have been delayed like another year and made the proper next generation title, but far be it from me to say that, because I wasn't going to play it on a PlayStation 4 anyway. I don't think it would have been fair on that game at all.
Well, I think what Hello Games have done with No Man's Sky has been laudable. They basically got their heads down, put their backs into it, and basically started releasing content update after content update and expansion after expansion, all for free.
Yeah.
You know, so anyway. And I think they've earned... the right to be respected again. You know, they earned it with, you know, with all those content updates a few years ago. That, you know, now it's just basically they keep doing it because they want to. So, moving on, a game that caught me off guard, really caught me off guard. And, okay, yeah, there are issues with the game later on in the game because of paywalls and microtransactions and stuff like that, because it is a mobile game. But for a good portion of the game...
Did you play it as a mobile game?
Yeah, I played it as a mobile game. And the thing is, for a good portion of the game, there's a lot of content there that you can use, that you can play, that that is accessible for a good portion of the game and all for free. And it really opened my eyes to just the blurring of console, PC and mobile now. Because this game came out on everything. It was Genshin Impact.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of people are talking about Genshin Impact, but it is one of those ones that... I wouldn't say it's a game changer, but I would say it is one of those landmarks in the history of gaming. You could basically stick a flag in and say, this is when Genshin Impact came out and everybody started paying much more attention to how much the lines are blurred between mobile, PC and console.
And also, it's the first properly majorly successful Chinese video game.
Yeah.
Like mainstream success, not...
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, Genshin Impact is... I mean, in some ways, it reminds me of the Tales franchise. In other ways, it reminds me of Ni No Kuni and games like that. It's got a very anime-esque aesthetic, but the core of the game, the, you know, what we call JRPG, but I think we'll probably call CRPG, Chinese RPG, rather than JRPG. So, you know, we don't want to get involved in that argument.
It's like me online. I don't know what I call Chinese anime, so I just call it anime, and I know that's wrong. There's probably a name for it.
But Genshin Impact is one of those games where you can see the echoes of the games that inspired it, and that's why it's appealing to a lot of people, because it doesn't do anything. It doesn't do any one thing particularly brilliantly, it's one of those games that isn't great, but it's like high good.
Yeah, let's put that on the box. It's high good. Sounds like orange juice, you know. Full of...
Do you know that would actually work as a badly translated poster quote from Chinese, wouldn't it? It's not great. It's high good.
Yeah, yeah, it would.
But yeah, Genshin Impact is it really got me paying attention to mobile games a lot more, because there are other games that have come out that haven't gained the same kind of traction as Genshin Impact, but are worth noting. They kind of fall into the same vein. I mean, I've been playing games like Assault Legends for a while now on my phone when I'm at work, because they're easy to pick up and play games, but I never actually sat down and properly played them in the same way that I did with Genshin Impact.
My biggest discovery this year was Hollow Knight.
Really?
Yeah, we got it for free on PlayStation Plus. I was toying with getting it before that. I was just waiting for it to sort of drop in price a little bit.
Yeah,
and then it came on that PS Plus, and I tried it once for what you're supposed to do. It doesn't tell you where to go. This is terrible. Got to a certain boss. I think it was the first battle with Hornet, which is about the third boss. And I thought, this is too hard. I hate this. Why did I make this so hard? And then I uninstalled it again, and then I reinstalled it. And currently, I'm at about 34 hours of my first time playthrough. This is from Team Cherry. I know it's got like a lot of big fandom online, this. For a multitude of reasons. It's a Metroidvania mixed with Dark Souls, because it has that aspect of Dark Souls where you collect souls, or in this case, Geo. And when you die, only Geo is left in that spot. There's ways around that, but your Geo is left in that spot, and you have to go back to that place, defeat your soul, and get the money back, which is a classic Dark Souls thing, bit, as well as the difficulty curve. But it's one of the best designed games I've played in this generation.
Wow.
Because everything leads... It's got pitch-perfect platforming for a great deal of it. all of the worlds are designed. It doesn't tell you any information. The information's all told through geographical sort of setup, so you know what everything means. It all flows beautifully. The gameplay arc isn't too difficult after you get past that initial realization that it's not really going to hold your hand. But once you got over the fact and you can stand up on your own two legs and understand the gameplay and how it works, it's kind of a revelation. Just for people who play the game, I can't remember what to call them now. It's just before you get into Deep Nest, there's those guards that want to challenge you, and it's been a while since I got a lap bit, but that was the point where I was like, yeah, this is cool, I love this. And I just threw myself into it ever since. It's the only game I'm really playing right now.
Excellent.
And it's one of these games where you can play multiple times and it plays out differently. And the speedrunners who have done it in like 45 minutes.
See, I never understood the whole idea of speedrunning. Like, I played the game because I want, you know, the escapism. I don't want to finish it quickly and go back to real life. I want to stay here playing the game for a while.
Yeah, it also has the best sort of graphics of this sort of style of game. There's lots of hand-drawn games. There's lots of sort of... I like what I think it was Girlfriend Reviews described Dead Cells as. Rainbow Diarrhea or Rainbow Vomit? Because it just colours everywhere and you don't know what the hell is happening.
Yeah.
The design of Hollow Knight is almost pitch perfect because you always understand what's happening. It's always set up perfectly because of that thing that I was talking about earlier, how it establishes rules for each of the kingdoms and you know how everything works.
Okay.
It's not for everybody. I didn't think it was for me, honestly.
I mean, I've been going through that Metroidvania action platformer jaunt of mine recently, so I think I'm going to have to give... Hollow Knight is on my list of games to play, but I'm going to have to bump it up to next.
Honestly, I think Hollow Knight is the best of the lot. I don't think there's really any competition about it. It's one of the best indie games of this generation.
Okay,
really competes with it, I'll be honest.
I know what I'm playing next then.
Because most indie games are sort of in and out. This is an indie game where you could probably put about 100 hours into it. And yeah, I kind of love it. And I'm really looking forward to the next one, which is coming out on the Switch first, Hollow Knight Silk Song, in which you play Hornet.
Okay, right. Speaking of games that, you know, we love, my last one is a game that really I didn't expect to like as much as I do. And even now that I think about it, it puts a smile on my face because of how brash and how bold and just how very, very British it is as well at times. Because the developer, Kaizen Gameworks, are a British developer, and they put out a game on PC and Switch called Paradise Killer.
Okay.
Right, now...
It sounds like a badly translated Japanese title, can I just say that?
Yeah, but this is the thing, the title actually makes a lot of sense once you start playing the game. Because you basically take on the role of a character called Lady Love Dies. Right,
and you could also do a deeply racist Japanese pronunciation of it, which I'm not gonna.
Yeah, but you take on the role of Lady Love Dies, and the way it works is that the God Syndicate, or the Syndicate as they're called, they basically got together and started creating these groups of islands, which they called Paradise, and they were basically going through stages of making them more and more perfect. But each time something happened, the island was destroyed. Lady Love Dies, for some reason, which they do go into a little bit and actually expand on more as the story progresses. Lady Love Dies has been exiled from paradise, and her current exile is something like 3 million days, 3 million and something days. So she's been exiled for that long. But her exile is over because, it turns out, the syndicate, the gods that make up the heads of the syndicate, have all been killed by a mysterious killer, and you have to... You're basically an investigator, you're like a private detective type thing, and you have to investigate who the killer is and try and catch them and find out what their motivation is.
This is that basically Vaporwave game, isn't it?
What's Vaporwave?
Vaporwave is sort of woozy VHS electronica.
There's a little bit of that, but there's a it's kind of weird.
There's an aesthetic to it as well.
Yeah,
lots of pinks and sort of washed out neons and.
Not quite. I mean, the colours are a lot quite vibrant, I'd say. But in terms of the music style, I mean, the music is something that stands out for me in this game. It's kind of a weird electro.
It is vaporwave. That's what that music. That's jazz. What the music's called. It is vaporwave. Yeah.
But it's got like that jazz fusion thing going on as well.
That's part of vaporwave.
Okay, then yeah, that's vaporwave. But anyway, Lady Lovedies is a really interesting character. She's kind of snarky, kind of sarcastic, and you do meet characters and you have dialogue choices and stuff like that. But it's all part of the investigation. What I love about it is, ages ago we had to review Danganronpa, long time ago. And I always thought the investigation side of Danganronpa was kind of dull. What Kaizen Gameworks have done with Paradise Killer is take that whole idea of first-person investigation into things and use it well. Use it in the way that maybe it should have been used from the beginning in a lot of other games, where you can focus on things, examine them, talk to people about them, talk to characters about what happened here, what happened there. And you can interact with just about everybody. You know, the environments are great. The characters have really interesting, sometimes flamboyant designs.
Okay.
You know, and just the whole game is a delight to play because of the... I mean, you have this colourful range of characters to choose from who come in all sorts of shapes and sizes, and the majority of these characters are gods. There are some normal humans in there as well, but most of them are gods, with all of the arrogance and hubris that goes with being a god. And you have other characters who are who hate the gods because the gods basically take everything away. They're the normal people, and they have all of the failings of normal people. And in somewhere in this mix, you have to find out who this killer is and save Paradise. You basically have to bring the truth back to Paradise and save Paradise from itself, effectively.
Okay.
It's a really, really fascinating story.
Okay, that's fine.
So, yeah, Paradise Killer by Kaizen Gameworks is really good. I was surprised. I mean, I made the comparison to Danganronpa, but it's so much better than Danganronpa because it doesn't have all that pretentiousness to it.
So, it basically, what you're saying is it's a terrible game.
What, Paradise Killer?
Because you basically... the bar is set too low to be better than something there, Rob. Danganronpa is garbage. And if it's better than garbage, it must just be terrible.
No.
I know, I'm being facetious. Obviously, it's better than that, but... I'm just using that as an opportunity to thrash Danganronpa, I'll be honest.
Yeah, I know. It's a lot better than that. And the fact that... See, Danganronpa basically plays like it's on rails. When you go down a corridor, you can only go back, forward, left or right. Whereas in Paradise Killer, it's a lot more free-flowing, the first-person perspective. So you can look around, you can go straight up to objects, pick them up, you can interact with people. It's like playing a normal first-person perspective game, right? You're not having to go down a corridor and then walk back on yourself and then turn left or turn right to go down another corridor. You just walk down the corridor.
Yeah. Okay.
So, yeah, that's it for Marmalade for 2020.
Yeah, this is basically the December edition of Marmalade, but we played it a little bit differently because it's the end of the year, so it should be played a little bit differently.
Yeah. Let us know what games stood out for you during 2020 in the comments below, and that's whether they were good or bad.
You know, and this is new or old.
And new or old. The games that you played in 2020 that stood out for you. We're not talking about the best games of 2020, just the ones that stood out for you, whether new or old.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah.
The next Marmalade will be normal service resuming, so what we've been playing through January.
Yeah.
Also on the channel, Impossible Mission will go through a little bit of a change.
Yep.
We might have a week off just so we can get that change sort of moving, really, rather than putting pressure on ourselves to sort of just land feet first, because nobody does that. And also on the channel is going to be a new music podcast featuring Graham of our old movie podcast, Cinema Eclectica, and that new one is called Pop Screen. So that will be going live around the 7th or 8th, so look forward to that.
Hello, I'm J. Michael Tatum, and you are listening to The Geek Show.
I like films starring pop stars. I like films about pop stars. I like films which have set design by pop stars. Probably gone a bit far there, I can't actually think of one of those. Anyway, this is why I've launched The Geek Show's new podcast, Pop Screen, where every week, me and a guest host take a look at one film, either starring by or about a pop star, and by pop I could mean anything from heavy metal to blues to disco to hip-hop, and we analyse it relentlessly, asking all of the big questions.
Ewan, who's your favourite Spice Girl?
Oh no. Can I say Richard E. Grant's my favourite Spice Girl?
And even giving some of the big answers with our unparalleled level of research and nerdishness.
I'm definitely a Beatles fan. I was on a Beatles tour taxi in Liverpool with my family, and the tour guide started referring to me for little details and to double check his facts.
So whether you're an absolute beginner or a 24-hour party person, get swept away. I'll stop doing this now, I promise. By Pop Screen, the new podcast from the Geek Show Podcast Network. It's about music, it's about movies, it's about nonsense. We're hosted on Audioboom and available on your podcast provider of choice, as well as the Geek Show's YouTube channel. Remember to like and subscribe.
Hello and welcome to a brand new series here at The Geek Show called News Trash. The weekly video game content here used to be Impossible Mission, and fear not, Impossible Mission hasn't gone away. It's just going to be fortnightly, a bit more tailored to what's going on around current game releases, a bit broader, and, you know, it'll be back. But the weekly part of the Geek Show's YouTube channel now, which is tailored on video games, is this episode of News Trash. And as I introduced, I probably should have introduced, I'm Rob. And as ever, on Impossible Mission and this, I'm joined by other Rob.
Hello!
Who's there? Les's face, yes. There and everything.
This is my face here, finally.
Yeah. So, it's not going to be the news stories, which is in every other news thing, because there's certain stories which get overreported. Like, we could talk about the GameSpot thing.
GameStop, not GameSpot. GameStop.
They're both American. I don't care.
What is a shop? What is a website?
So we won't be talking about that.
Yeah.
We'll be talking about other things which we find interesting around the sides of the news story, things which don't really get reported.
Well, I mean, they do get reported. It's just they don't really hit, like, the mainstream YouTube press.
Okay, that's set in a way. They get buried by the noise.
Yes. I mean, leaving, like, GameStop investment stuff and everything like that to one side, and also leaving to one side, you know, people who are just doing their jobs.
Yeah, because that was one of the things. We have podcasts, our movie podcast, our book podcast, our comics, whatever. We did news on them once upon a time, and we just stopped doing news because a lot of it was, this person is doing this story, and this person works here now.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't hit the news if, you know, I go to work somewhere else, or you go to work somewhere else.
It's not like the front page of the news. It's like, man gets new job.
Yeah.
it's not on the news.
How is that news? Yeah. I don't understand.
Yeah. You know?
And yet people go nuts over that kind of thing. And I'm like, but it's just a guy doing his job, or it's just a lady doing her job. How is that news?
It's not.
They go to work, they pay the taxes, hopefully.
Unless you're a turnip boy who evades, who does tax evasion, which is one of my favourite names for a gamer this early in 2021.
Yeah. Turnip boy does tax evasion.
Yeah.
It is an amazing name for a game.
I hope the game is anywhere near as good as that title. But anyway, we are tangenting. Yeah. We should jump into the news.
Yes. We've just talked about people doing their jobs and not being used. And technically, this is that, but it isn't. EA have established a new studio called Full Circle, who are going to be developing a new skate title. Now, this is right in your wheelhouse, Rob. You are the skate man. You are the skate man.
Yeah, that's the reason why I've got a crooked nose. I mean, I've mentioned that on other things. Yeah. But, yeah, it's... They did have a studio that did it before. It was EA Black Box, and they did a lot of NHL games and bits and pieces. But EA being EA, they mothballed it and then made them do, I don't know, some nonsense, the next FIFA or something.
Hmm.
So that's got me worried. But it's also got me worried how weird a cycle this is. Because as this, it was one of the... E3 sort of time frame press releases, shows, trade shows, whatever you want to call them. And they said, oh, by the way, we're making Skate 4, or a new Skate. And that is such, that's been sort of the way they've done it so far. This is, oh, by the way, we're doing this with Skate. And I think it was, it had to happen, a new Skate coming.
Mm.
Because everything that EA ever did, it says, where's the next skate? Where's the next skate? Where's the next skate? It's like constant comments. They were badgered by it so much.
Yeah. Well, I mean, what they've said is that the core creative leads, Darren Chung and Cuz Parry, who have worked on the previous game, they're going to be back to work on the new title as well.
Yeah, the thing that worries me, though, is... Another thing that worries me is... The original Skates were made before EA was this titan of microtransactions.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, I know they say a leopard can't change its spots, yeah? But, you know, big companies and leopards are very different things. And I know that EA have a tendency to be creatures of habit, especially at the executive level. But I think that maybe the Battlefront, issue
bit and FIFA. Bit
too hard. FIFA and Battlefront, especially because they got hit in the courts with it. They didn't just get hit by fans, they got hit in the courts in loads of different countries over the microtransaction issue.
Yeah.
I think maybe it's once bitten, twice shy here.
But to relate it to the studio, I mean, it being set up, if they're going to give them autonomy to do the game as they've always wanted to do it.
Yeah.
Cool. But... Yeah. Given the company which EA are, given the bad things they're doing, given the fact that they're being called out by governments, both in here at the UK and I think Belgium was another country.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think EA are the most hated game company in the world. I think right now that goes to CD Projekt Red for other reasons we won't go into. That's another over-reported story, but they're not exactly beloved either, so I'm happy that they're doing it.
Yeah,
But it's a big hanging butt cheek, you know, looming overhead.
There is. I'm a bit more, I think I'm a bit more kind of sitting on the fence on this one, wait and see kind of attitude because of things like Star Wars Squadrons, which actually turned out to be a remarkably good game with basically no microtransactions or anything like that. And the fact that,
Jedi Fallen Order as well, yeah.
There's Jedi Fallen Order, and also the Star Wars franchise has now been opened up to other companies.
So Ubisoft are making Star Wars Creed. Star Wars Creed Dogs Division 2 or something.
they're making a Star Wars game. We'll find out more details. But the fact that Star Wars is no longer exclusively with EA... I think is also going to be a bugbear for EA. So they're going to have to re-examine where they've gone wrong. And maybe that will be a positive thing going forward. Maybe they'll start listening to gamers. Maybe they'll start listening to the consumers instead of the executives. You never know.
Unlikely, but we'll see when it happens. I'd be much more excited if they were reviving EA big to do a new SSX game.
Yeah. But
Skate, I love Skate too. Just Skate isn't SSX. SSX is a big dog game for me.
Yeah. I mean, it all depends. I mean, eventually it all comes down to money, you know. EA are in it for the money. And maybe when they first started off, they weren't in it for the money, but video games are a primary industry now. They're at the forefront of entertainment.
Biggest entertainment industry in the world, yeah. Exactly. I think they're actually as big as movies and music combined right now.
Yeah. Do you know what kind of highlights just how big video games are, right, is this next story? Amazon, right? This is from a report in Bloomberg. Amazon have spent nearly $500 million in a year on its video game division.
Wow.
Yeah, exactly. Now,
I mean, what they're spending it on? They're spending it on, they bought Prime, didn't they? Not Prime. They already had Prime. They bought Twitch.
The thing is, this number doesn't include Twitch.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It also doesn't include Amazon's streaming service, Amazon Luna.
So what are they spending it on?
You know, Amazon's brought in a number of video game veterans, including people who've worked on Portal and Far Cry 2 and things like that. And they are, you know, they're basically tried working on a couple of games. Was it Breakaway and some kind of hero shooter called Crucible?
Working on an RPG, sort of a fantasy RPG as well.
Yeah, New World, that one was called.
Yeah.
That was, that's basically been shelved pretty much, hasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's sad that those people who were making these games don't get to see the product, the fruit of their work released and find the audience that it deserves. Even though rumour has it they were quite bad, you know, even so, they deserve to have their work have closure, I guess, is the word, the phrase to put under it. But at the end of the day, this just shows that even all the money in the world can't make it crack the video game industry. It takes more than that.
Well, yeah, I mean, Amazon have come into it thinking that the video games development, it works a certain way, and it doesn't work that way. They're about 10, 15 years behind the curve. I mean, this is some of the stuff that from the Bloomberg report. It detailed issues within Amazon itself, including a lack of incentives, struggles with its lumberyard engine, and also an internal bro culture where women were not afforded the same opportunities as their male counterparts, which you really just don't do in video games development these days.
No, I mean, the doors have been blown off as far as workplace culture and workplace treatment in these past 2 years or so.
Exactly.
And rightfully so, you know. I mean, this issue, the financial end of this issue as well, it hit Google too, because they thought they could just sort of traipse in like Billy Big Bollocks and conquer the video game industry with Stadia, and it has not worked.
No, I mean, Stadia... I think Stadia is one of those slow burns. Eventually, it might get to a level where it's usable, but I think...
Yeah, I think the damage has been done, yeah.
Yeah, I think the damage has been done. It's the same with Amazon Luna. Amazon Luna, really, there's no point. Right, I have Amazon Prime, and I get the free games on Amazon Prime, and I'm happy to get the free games on Amazon Prime, but would I use Amazon Luna? Really, no.
I didn't know it was a thing until, like, a few days ago. It's not well promoted at all.
Exactly. I mean, right. You and I both have smartphones that are pretty powerful, yeah? We could easily, if we had a Bluetooth controller that connected to the smartphone, we could easily play games on our smartphone of a certain level.
Well, yeah, I guess. I mean, it'd melt the batteries very quickly, but yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, if you were streaming the game using something like Game Pass, because you can.
Yeah, you can.
Stream the game using Game Pass, and apparently it's pretty solid. So why would you go for something like Stadia or Luna when you've got more options with something like Game Pass or PlayStation Now?
It's kind of telling, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, just the history of games and games production and games publishing or whatever. We had Nintendo. It's a console, not including PC. We had Nintendo, who were the big dog, and then Sega. Very, very competitive, and then Sega fell away. And then Sony picked up, and then Microsoft a few years later.
Yeah.
But Microsoft, when they joined, they were basically shunned for a long time. They pushed hard to get into the video game industry. It wasn't just, come on in, welcome aboard. You know, want to make video games? You're the best. Oh, there's my camera phone. You're the best. But no, the video game industry should be able to incorporate however many companies want to make them, as you can imagine. Like everybody come on board, it's a free for all. But no, it seems that whenever it hits three, the bulkhead starts, like, you know, it's a boat and there's too many people on the boat and it starts letting in water in the low levels. So,
see, this is the thing, right?
That's a really tortured analogy. I'm sorry about that.
It is. That's why I'm taking over from there. Right. I think that video games is a big enough industry for you to have more than three players. Yeah. It used to be the case. And right. The reason why he's ignored PC and stuck to consoles is because he knows that it's a bugbear of mine.
And PCs are complicated. The PC market is very complicated.
No, it's not. It's a lot easier than people think, right? It's just I have a bugbear about the fact that whenever people talk about retro consoles, it's only ever Nintendo or Sega. Whereas I grew up playing games on the Commodore 64 and the ZX Spectrum and the Commodore Amiga and the Atari ST and those sorts of things. And there were literally thousands of games on them. But do they get any attention? No, because you all focus on bloody Nintendo or Sega.
Whenever he does that, I'm just going to...
So anyway...
And for the audio listeners, that's me reading a book. Yeah. Except I'm not leaving listening.
Leaving that to one side and leaving your tortured analogy to one side, I think that the industry is big enough to have and support more than three players. It has done in the past, and that was when it was a lot smaller, right? The industry was a lot smaller when the Commodore Amiga was around, when the Atari ST was around, when the Amstrad was around, when the Acorn was around. And you still had Nintendo and Sega, and you had Atari still making, you know, the Jaguar was still a thing at that point. And so you had, you know, six, seven, eight different platforms that you could play video games on.
Yeah, it was probably oversaturated, but enough of that.
I don't think we're oversaturated now. I just think...
No. We're not. But before we jump into the next story, take this opportunity to mention the Patreon. If you head over to thegeekshow.co.uk or patreon.com/thegeekshow, you can support us, help us continue to do what we do. There are two tiers at the moment. At the £1, this is a UK podcast, remember, a UK outlet, so none of this dollar nonsense. At the £1 tier, you get access to our movie podcast, in which myself and Graham, who does Pop Screen, have a big bag of directors. We pick one of their names at random, and then we talk about their films, one of them big and one of them small. And at the £3 tier, we have an extra episode of Pop Screen, because Graham has so many episodes of Pop Screen. Pop Screen is a podcast about pop stars in movies, whether it's acting, directing, or anything in between. And there's an extra episode of that every month. So
he
if
made
you want
me do Free Jack,
he made him do he Free
made
Jack.
Me do Free Jack,
and I made Graham do Wild Zero, the Guitar Wolf zombie movie, which is bad. But if any of that sounds interesting, please do check us out at www.patreon.com/thegeekshow. Now back to the news.
Back to the news. So, in other news, Netflix, right? Netflix and Legendary have announced that they're going to be producing a Tomb Raider animated series.
It's not the first thing they're doing animated. They've also got a Resident Evil animated movie, which is due to hit pretty soon.
Yeah, and they've done Castlevania as an animated series. So this is kind of building on an actual positive, because Castlevania animated series is actually pretty good. The Resident Evil one, hopefully it's not like those weird CG Resident Evil.
Yeah, they were bad.
Degeneration, stuff like that,
don't get me wrong, they were bad, but they were still better than all of the Resident Evil movies bar the first one.
Tomb Raider's weird, one of those weird video games where it has a lot of history in video games, but it's also got three live-action movies and a whole host of comics.
I think it's got a fourth one in production. I think Ben Wheatley was supposed to be making it, if memory serves, the second Alicia Vikander movie.
Yeah, because, I mean, there was the two Angelina Jolie movies. It took me ages to remember her name earlier, by the way.
Yeah. It's funny how she's fallen, isn't it? Because she used to be one of the biggest movie stars on the planet, and now you're struggling to remember her name.
Yeah, I mainly remember her because of the lips, that's it.
Yeah, but the thing is, I mean, I know there's stories to Tomb Raider,
yeah,
but is there?
Well, there are plenty of... See, Tomb Raider's a lot like Indiana Jones in a certain sense. There were a lot of Indiana Jones stories that were told outside of the movies, especially in kind of video games. There was the Fate of Atlantis, and there was the, what was it, the Staff of Kings, and there were a few other Indiana Jones adventure games that were told. And there are a lot of things that you can do with that kind of character. You know, the kind of quasi swashbuckling character who basically goes around ruins, avoiding traps and fighting off various beasties and bad guys to win the treasure kind of thing. Yeah. So there's a lot of stories you can do there. We have all sorts of legends and folklore all over the world. So there are literally hundreds and hundreds of stories you can tell. And so when it came to the comic, there were a lot of things that you could do. The problem with the original version of Tomb Raider, though, was that they basically had Mike Turner doing the art.
You're going to have to explain that for all of us non-comic reading people.
Right. Mike Turner is the guy who created characters like Fathom, worked on Witchblade and Magdalena and various other comics, worked for like Dark Horse and Image, if I remember rightly.
I think you've dumbed it down a bit there. But not enough. You gotta go dumber.
Okay. The Tomb Raider comic was around the early noughties, late 90s, and it was kind of coming off the back of the whole weirdly statuesque.
Oh, so it's got Elvira, basically.
No, well, kind of a more streamlined Elvira by Ferrari kind of thing. yeah, Mike Turner was responsible. I'm trying to explain the character design of Mike Turner without being offensive, and it's really difficult.
Basically, he turned all of his character in over-sexualized Barbie dolls.
Basically, yeah. And so you ended up with things like Tomb Raider and Witchblade in the same kind of, in the same comic.
Yeah.
And, you know, and that was, you know, that was big during the 90s and early noughties. Not so much now, because it's really frowned on now. But that was the style that he used. And now, I think with Dark Horse, the new versions of Tomb Raider follow very much in the mold of the new games. So it's a lot more lifelike. It's a lot more realistic. You know, it's a lot more normal proportions when it comes to the art style.
And you see, there's a very big dividing line of ways which you could do this. I mean, on the one hand, you could go with the design and the aesthetics of the first two of the new trilogy, which is quite realistic. I think Alicia Vikander's movie sort of fits within that because she nearly dies multiple times in that movie. It has that sort of realism to it.
Yeah.
Everything else, super cartoony.
Yeah.
So it's where on that line, that where that line in the sand that they decide to fall really is to what it's going to be.
See, I think it would be hilarious, right? Absolutely hilarious if Netflix did the right. A lot of anime fans probably have forgotten about this, but there was a series called The Melancholy of Haruhi Suzumiya years ago, and the first episode of that was basically an amateur movie. There was basically a bunch of high school students trying to make a film, and all of the tropes about how you know, like the reflector is in shot and there's a microphone coming in from the top, and all of this was part of the amateur movie. And it was really, you know, the animation type and the quality was really grainy. And then at the end of it, you just see like the quality improves and you see, oh, right, it's an amateur film. This isn't actually what the series is like. And I would love it if Netflix and Legendary really trolled everybody by doing the first episode in the original Tomb Raider game style, as in the PlayStation 1 Tomb Raider game style.
Yeah. Well, I was going to go with something serious sort of as a final word, not serious sort of as a suggestion for if you want to use anime as a archetype for which to base us on.
Yeah.
Following Black Lagoon, that sort of plot structure and show structure, I think that might work quite well for it.
Black Lagoon would work very well for it, actually.
It's like a car DNA crew from.
The weird thing is, Tomb Raider is the kind of story that would fit in the world of Black Lagoon.
Basically sea pirates.
Yeah, they're basically sea pirates, but that whole, because they're based in Macau, and that whole thing about Macau would actually fit in the world of Tomb Raider. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, that whole thing would work. So anyway, moving on to Ninja Theory, who have halted their updates for Bleeding Edge.
Yeah, I mean, it's basically they're going to update it software wise, like bugs and this and that. But they're basically saying that there's nothing new now. A year is all the time they've really given it, which isn't really a fair shot when these style of games, these live services or whatever you want to call them, they are long tail games where you're investing in them for years at a time.
Yeah, I mean, they've basically come forward and said that they want to focus on the new Hellblade game and on a couple of other titles and focus more on mental health projects as well, which I think is laudable. Did Bleeding Edge really have that many people playing it?
I don't think it did, but again, like you say, you got to give these games a bit more of a chance for them to really get that success. But that's the thing which is really confusing me, games about mental health.
Yeah.
I'm not talking down to mental health, because like everybody this past year, we've all had our own problems.
Hmm.
But given the evidence of the games that are based around those themes so far, that as a theme, it has all sorts of possible ramifications and implications and styles and different ways of telling storytelling. I mean, look at Neverending Story. There's a movie about grief and depression, but it doesn't play out like that. Whereas if you look at video games, all of the games which are about mental health may as well wear a T-shirt that says, "I am a game about mental health." There's no subtlety to them whatsoever. And I'm including the original Hellblade in this too. So the idea that a company is committing to this, unless it grows up as far as the way it approaches mental health, I don't really care what they're going to do.
Well, I mean, the thing about what they want to focus on, aside from the new Hellblade game, the things that they're focusing on are things like their Project Mara and the Insight Project. If I remember rightly, the Insight Project was that it was that thing that was kind of linking game design and neuroscience with the aim of generating strategies to alleviate mental health issues, which is laudable. You know, it's laudable that they're actually working kind of on the scientific side rather than on the game development side.
Is that a game developer's job, though?
Well, that's the thing.
Is that what Microsoft bought them to do?
I don't know.
Because honestly, Microsoft have the resources to do that on their own. They don't need one of the companies that they're paid money for to do that.
This is true, but maybe it's something that they've tasked them to do. We don't know, because we don't know the. But I mean, if you go on the back of the original Hellblade and the fact that they actually brought in professional people and consulted them heavily, and when you play Hellblade, the first credits are for the historical, the person who ensured historical accuracy and the person who ensured accuracy with how it portrayed mental health issues, right? Maybe that's something that is a trigger for Microsoft to say, okay, you guys can focus on this. We're going to give you full license to focus on this. We're going to put money behind you. Don't worry about it. We just want you to develop this. Because Microsoft have basically said they want to be accessible for people, haven't they? And maybe this is one of the ways that they're looking at achieving that. You never know.
Yeah, I mean, I'm skeptical.
I am skeptical as well. I think there's dollars to be made in there somewhere.
There
will be a catch.
But honestly, I think that the way that video games have approached mental health so far has been quite juvenile. Yeah. So I'm not exactly infused to see more of it if it's going to continue being so juvenile.
I agree. I think that I think mental health is a complex subject, and you can't approach it in a way where you only portray one side of it, and that's it. And that's what a lot of games tend to do.
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
Over in Japan, we get a taste of just how crazy people still are over the PlayStation 5.
Well, before any of you get into the story full. What was that story recently, how due to a weakness in the URL, a scalper group managed to get all of the Argos PS5s in the UK before they were actually put up for sale?
Yeah, so which is crazy.
That's like a context, a background for this.
Yeah. So, Yodobashi Camera in Tokyo decided to have a lottery, what they call a chosen, in an attempt to curb scalpers. While they were trying to distribute the few hundred tickets for these sales of PlayStation 5s, the frantic fans basically, well, they almost turned into a riot, crush fest, whatever you want to call it. They surged forward, shouting and shoving in spite of the coronavirus surge and the current state of emergency. And within 10 minutes of the lottery, the police had to be called to the scene, and the sale was cancelled.
I wonder what Sony is thinking of the way that this is all going.
Yeah.
Because I don't know whether it's good for the PR. I mean, it's been almost impossible to get one.
Yeah.
Riots breaking out. Scalper groups basically commandeering all of your stock. It's not making Sony look good.
Well, not only that, I mean, some of the things that have happened with regards to the PlayStation 5, aside from the scalpers, there have been things like consoles being stolen, deliveries going missing, and people have even had their console replaced with bricks.
No, that one.
During delivery. So basically, they think they're buying a console. The delivery gets to their house. They open it up and it's basically just bricks inside.
Yeah, this is really, really bad PR. I know they say, there's no such thing as bad PR. Yep, there is. There is.
Oh, there definitely is.
We're living through it. And obviously, it's one of the most hot ticket consumer items on the planet right now. You can't buy one for love nor money. But, yeah, it just leaves a bad taste in the mouth for a lot of people.
Well, I mean, the thing is, it's all of the consoles, all of the next-gen consoles, the Series X and the Series S, the PlayStation 5, either version, and even the Switch.
Yeah.
You know, they're all really, really hard to get hold of. The Switch less so because it's been around for a lot longer. But if you look at the price of the Switch, it's not going down at all. It's just going up.
Yeah.
So I think this is the longer that this pandemic lasts, we're not going to see an end to this scalping. We're not going to see an end to any of this.
Yeah, and if you listen to watch one of our shows on Impossible Mission, I put a link up in the top corner. We talked about a great wave of cancellations and delays. There's a drought coming.
Yes, there is.
And that refers to both games and the devices. So
yeah,
I think we're living through this drought right now.
I'll be honest, I was shocked to find out that that over the last year, the price of PlayStation 2 games have gone through the roof.
Right? Really? Wow.
Yeah. So my collection is worth a lot of money now.
Well, hock it, Rob. Hock it and get, and you know, buy a suit made out of gold.
The thing is, right, whenever you try and find out the price of certain games, every website talks about the American version of that. I'm like, no, I'm dealing with the UK market. And so when you go onto the UK sites, it's not as expensive here in the UK for some reason for a lot of the games. Some of them are more expensive because they were only released in the UK, but most of them aren't. You know, games that were banned in the UK, like Rule of Rose, for example, they're going to have a lot, you know, they're going to have a lot of value here in the UK because they were never sold here. But it's, you know, it's easy to get hold of in America. But then I find that games that I've got that I thought were kind of worthless are worth a lot more money. I'm like, okay.
Okay, so I think that's all we have time for this week, as far as news. There's another aspect to this show. It's going to be called Trailer Trash. Whenever there's a trailer which piques our interest, we'll put a section in the end of the show where we talk about that.
Yeah.
But because I won't call it a section of the show where we only talk about sort of major high-profile games, because that would be very limiting, because there's not that many. Otherwise, everything would be high-profile, nothing would be high-profile, in some sort of backwards logic. When everybody's special, no one's special, Rob. That's what I'm basically saying there.
Okay, so, syndrome.
When there's a trailer that piques our interest, we'll put it at the end of the show, whether it's big or small, and there just isn't that many interesting trailers, unfortunately. Yeah. But yeah, if you want to chat with us about any of the topics or any of the things that we brought up this week, do comment below, because we'll be down there to chat with you about them. But until next Monday, where this will be a weekly show where we talk about the news. But yeah, until next Monday, this has been News Fresh, and we have been The Geek Show, and we will see you later.
Yeah. Oh, and just a quick aside, because I know someone's going to comment. Yes, I know. Double pop filters. I just was too lazy to remove this one.
Mine's out of shot. See you next time.